If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Terrace Talk. Norwich City head to Merseyside this weekend to face Everton in the Premier League, hoping to arrest what has been quite an alarming slump for them at the start of this season. We'll get into that in a lot more detail over the next 25 minutes or so. Connor Southwell, delighted to be joined by Norwich fan Nick Dye and football writer for Liverpool World, Will Rooney as well. Gents, thank you so much for joining me. Nick, let's start with you then from a Norwich perspective. It's all a bit gloomy at the moment, isn't it? I was hoping that with you coming on, you'd be able to inject some optimism and positivity into the show. So for Norwich fans watching this, are there any reasons to be cheerful at the moment?
I will try my best. That's about as much as I can do. No, there are reasons to be cheerful. Coming away from just Everton and looking at the big picture, if you look at where we are, and I know that's the happy clapper, singing, rhyming slang of, you know, look where we are, look how far we've come, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact that we're in the Premier League, the fact that we're able to put out a B team that includes the Republic of Ireland centre forward, a wonder kid from Greece, it's, you know, we've got Barley Mumba playing right back, high prospect from the England youth setup. This is our B team now. That's a far cry from when I used to sit in the terraces and watch Norwich. So, and that's not going back that many years. So, yeah, there's reasons to be cheerful. You know, it just might mean that it needs to take time, and if we have enough time.
Yeah, I think you're right there. We're of course speaking after a League Cup defeat to Liverpool, so that makes it what, one win in six competitive games so far this season. Obviously, the Premier League statistics are the ones that are going to get a lot of attention. 15 successive defeats. Obviously, the record held by Sunderland is 20. So Norwich edging closer to that now. We obviously hope that that's broken this weekend at Goodison Park. But just to kind of zoom out and, as you say, reflect on maybe the start of the season, which hasn't gone in the way that Norwich City Daniel Farker will have hoped, although he kind of said that they're maybe 3 points away from perhaps where they expected to be. It was a very disappointing Watford game, which we'll get into in a bit more detail. But is that really where Norwich City are at the moment in terms of outlook, and certainly looking ahead to the next two games, a tough doubleheader of away games in the Premier League at Everton and Burnley, where a win, a point, just anything would give them an opportunity to get started in the league and to make up for lost ground in the opening five games?
Potentially, we may gel and click and put in some really good Premier League performances and not pick up anything either. The fact that we haven't been at it and there has been huge glaring gaps, it's kind of led everyone's attention towards Daniel Farker. Why are we tactically this way? Why does it not look right? Why does it not feel right? The facts are that the level is just really, really high. And it's going to take time to bed in new players. I remember when players would come over from continental Europe, you know, Gianfranco Zola would come over and pundits would say, oh, he needs to have a year to bed himself in, to get used to the league. And we're just expecting, you know, young players like Christos Solis to come in at 19 years old out of the Greek league and start scoring goals and winning us games in the Premier League. It's a lot to ask. And I think there's going to need to be a degree of patience. I just don't know how close we are to needing that big, heavy reset button that may mean that we get Premier League survival and what the risk reward of that is. Because the risk is, obviously, we do a big reset, it all goes horribly wrong and everyone wants out the door and it's a really negative place to be. The reward is potentially some of these things that are just not quite clicking right now, just get thrown out of the window and we start again. For me, every time I'm watching Norwich, I'm like, we got to get rid of the manager. We got to, you know, this is all going wrong. What are we doing? And then afterwards, when I kind of not just listen to Daniel Farke, but just look at it in hindsight and think, well, you know, we're not a million miles away. We just need to keep persisting with the vision and see if it comes together. So, you know, I'm torn right now.
Torn, I think, is a good way to sum it up. Will, let's come to you from an Everton perspective. How's the start of the season gone? Obviously, Rafa Benitez, new man in the dugout. Quite an interesting appointment, of course, for his history at their rivals. What have fans made of him so far, and what does his team kind of look like at the moment?
I don't think Rafa Benitez would have asked for much better start, to be honest with you, given, as you mentioned, his links across Stanley Park with Liverpool and winning the Champions League, and his small club comment after a 0-0 draw in the Merseyside derby, which Everton fans didn't forget. That was quickly thrown at him. But the thing with Benitez is he lives in the area as long as he's lived way to Chelsea and Newcastle. He's always still remains on the whittle. And he understands the culture of Everton fans, and he's really tapped into that quite shrewdly, to be honest with you. He's not being ignorant. He's realised that what the Everton fans want and what has been lacking for the last few years, and that's having an identity and a connection between the fans and the team. When they've been chopping the change in managers with Marco Silva, Coleman, Allardyce, it's, and even Ancelotti didn't cut the muscle. It's been tough for Everton fans, but now there's an identity back. There's a distinct style of football. It's not your tippy-tappy stuff. It's not you playing out from the back, passing it around for no reason. But it's about getting it forward quickly. It's not horrible on the eye. It's about loads of crosses, getting into the box, flooding the box, getting them forwards. And that's what Everton fans want. They just want to see the team give it 100% every time they step out on the pitch. Last couple of results, all right, they haven't gone their way. But 10 points from 5 games, they keep that up, and they're in the Champions League. Look, they're not going to keep that up, let's be realistic. The summer was confined by financial fair play constraints due to predecessors overspending. And unfortunately, Benitez has come in. He knew what was coming into. Teaching on the edge of that. He thought he might have been able to move some big earners on. He wasn't able to. So he had to make do. Only 1.7 million spent on 5 players. But yeah, so far, good start for Everton, I think.
Is what you said there about financial fair play? I mean, he's seen in football now as being a relatively safe pair of hands. He did a very good job at stabilising Newcastle, of course, despite relegation in the Premier League. They're still there now, albeit under a different manager and a different sort of style of play. But you kind of mentioned the spend there. Two of those players, Damari Gray and Andros Townsend, seem to have hit the ground running. The style of play point is interesting. Are Everton fans beginning to warm to him? Is that kind of the sense, maybe? Because it did feel like, irrespective of kind of what happens with him in the future, that the start of the season was pivotal for kind of changing people's opinions of him a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I think if it had been a poor start, then he wouldn't have got the patience as some others would have, just because of his links. But, and we've seen it beforehand, there were a lot of detractors, people saying they want Benitez. Some people saying they don't even want Benitez, not just because he'd managed Liverpool, but Everton fans maybe wanted someone differently. But as I say, there's a connection there now, and he has won a lot over. After Tuesday night's defeat against QPR and the Carabao Cup, there's been a little bit of backlash, but I think that's more towards this strength of the squad and what's gone on before Benitez arrived, what's being spent. It's not, no one's really targeting Benitez as such. It's more what's gone on, say, from Marcel Brands, the director of football, the sort of spending from Farhad Moshiri, the owner, rather than it all going towards Benitez. Because some of the players who played at QPR, like the John Joe Kenny, wants a right back in, couldn't get one in. So yeah, it's positive so far, and look, it's not going to, there's going to be ups and downs this season, but I think a lot of Everton fans accept that it's a bit of a transitional period. And some Everton fans, one I spoke to said we need to give him 3 years, and that's what you need now. They've changed the manager too much, and there hasn't been the continuity that Everton are crying out for.
Yeah, a little bit of stability. It does feel like that's what they need to an extent, particularly after Ancelotti left. And as you mentioned, there was a lot of kind of focus on him and what he would offer and some of the players he brought in last summer. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do this season. Nick, let's come back to you. As we've kind of spoken about, being probably, I don't know if I'd say discontent is the word, but maybe growing concerns about the start of this season for Norwich City, certainly among supporters. We've seen Daniel Farke transition from what was essentially a 4-2-3-1 to a 4-3-3. We kind of referenced that game against Liverpool earlier. We saw a kind of a 3-5-2 formation in that one. How do you expect him to go for this weekend? Do you expect him to stick with that three-man formation now? Do you think he'll revert to a four? How do you kind of see him playing it? Because as we sit here, Norwich have had three different partnerships in their opening five Premier League games, which certainly isn't ideal.
I'm not sure. I think the 4-2-3-1 is something that the fans are really hung up on. And I think if you go back to the 19-20 season, it worked, but then when you look at the last time in the Premier League, you've got, you know, we played Duda in that role. Kenny McLean had to play in that role. And that position does get lost in the Premier League unless you really play to the strength of it. And obviously on the flip side of it, if you want to play a number 10 and that the role of that player is essentially to roll Timu Pukki in, then you're going to lose a lot on the back end, especially on the counter-attack, where your two centre midfielders are going to get split. You're going to get, your full-backs are going to get caught high when the 10 gets the ball because they have to show, because otherwise you end up too narrow and you're going to get torn apart. So I think that's probably what Daniel Farke and his coaching staff looked at and went, 4-2-3-1, we can get away with it when we've got 60-70% of the ball in the Championship. I don't know if we're going to get away with it now. Now, going 4-3-3, what we've found now is we've kind of isolated Todd Cantwell out of the team a little bit, because in a 4-2-3-1, he liked to come inside. He could switch around with the 10. Now we're saying, okay, we're going to play with wide players. Rashica clearly needs a little bit more time, but what he wants to do is run at people in the wide areas. And he can break through, and he has got that knack of kind of getting through in that 1v1 situation. The three at the back, the Liverpool game's hard to judge because, you know, you've got a lot of players in there that haven't played that many minutes, but it did look a little bit awkward. And I think we're asking an awful lot in a two centre back formation. We're asking a lot of Grant Hanley, and people say, well, he does it for Scotland, but for Scotland, he heads it and kicks it. He doesn't have to, you know, be the covering defender, sweep around the back. He doesn't have to do so much of the ball playing and playing out, because Scotland typically will sit deep against teams, or if they're not sitting deep, then they're typically against lesser opposition. So I think Daniel Farke, that's one thing that he's going to need to get right. I know he played a lot with the three-man system in pre-season, so clearly he has an idea of it might be something he wants to use in the Premier League. Didn't really work at Liverpool, but then he would argue, well, they only had three shots and scored three goals. So maybe. And we've got Ozan Kabak to drop into that back three. So, you know, where he would fit in, right, left or centre, is another one. I think it, as a guess, I would say he'll probably go back to a 4-3-3. But the other side of the question, I think, rather than a formation, I think what he's going to start doing now is leaning on more experienced players, because we've seen mistakes out of Brandon Williams. And we've also seen amazing performances out of him. And I think when you're playing a lot of these younger players, Billy Gilmore, another one who's made mistakes and cost us this season, although he's also put in brilliant displays, I think when we're trying to grind out points and we're trying to grind out wins and we're trying to just try and establish ourselves in the relegation race, to get out of that bottom three, I think he might start turning to some more experienced players. And I think we might start to see more of Yiannoulis. We might start to see a midfield that includes Norman, Pierre Lesmelou, Kenny McLean, just something to create a little bit more grit and determination in there versus the free-flowing football that we're used to. And I don't think Norwich fans will be too upset about that. I think that's kind of what we need right now, and that might be the reset that we need.
Is it at the moment for Daniel Farker maybe an internal battle between idealism and pragmatism? It's kind of what it feels like. We all know how Daniel Farker wants to play football, as you've articulately put there. In the Premier League, it's very difficult to do that and to implement his style of play. The fundamentals will always stay the same, of course. But in terms of what we saw last season, Norwich dominating the ball, dominating opponents, getting at teams, it's just a lot harder to do in the Premier League because of everything that we spoke about in terms of quality. So is this Daniel Farker's compromise between idealism and pragmatism, do you feel, this kind of newfound shape and system and approach that we're seeing from Norwich City at the moment?
Yeah, and I don't know how happy he is with it. But when he came in, it was, I want to have the ball for 90 minutes and that's how I train my teams, that's how I want my teams to play. And now we're looking at the Premier League and coming off the back of the last season, we were up and he's going, if I do that again, we're probably going to get relegated. So I'm going to have to find a compromise somewhere. Now, where that compromise is, whether he feels comfortable with that, whether the players he's brought in or Stuart Webber's brought in or the recruitment team's brought in are players that he feels can bring him both. We just haven't seen enough performances to warrant to see where this team's going to go. And if Daniel Farker is going to essentially sacrifice trying to keep the ball against Liverpool with the three-man system, I thought there was one really, really good passage of play where Billy Gilmore picked up the ball, got it on the turn, played it forwards, quick counter-attacking play. And that's what I expected of Norwich this season, to be far more like that versus the quite tiresome build-up where teams are just creeping up on us and then setting their press. And then we're starting to see mistakes out of Krul. We're starting to see the mistakes. You know, we've seen goals leaked out of Brandon Williams from that scenario. Gibson's been caught out. So I think we may have to revert. I just don't know how happy Daniel Farker is with that and whether he has the ability to change a lot of his methods and change his ideals in order to suit the picture that Norwich City needs.
Yeah, it's an interesting debate and one that I expect will rumble on beyond this weekend, irrespective of what happens. Will, let's come back to you. You mentioned the cup defeat that Everton had on Tuesday evening. Before that, arguably certainly a more concerning result in terms of 3-0 defeat to Aston Villa. What has kind of been the response from fans to that, and talk us through that game a little bit, and because it was essentially a 9-minute spell, wasn't it, where Aston Villa scored 3 goals. So what was the issues? What led to that happening?
I think when you have 4 regular starters, 4 key players, and your 2 main strikers, Richarlison and Dominic Calvert-Lewin, your captain James Coleman, and the number one for England, Jordan Pickford. Any team who are missing those players would struggle. Never mind an Everton squad that doesn't boast an array of strength and depth. For 60 minutes, Everton competed. Ultimately, it came down to the substitutes that both sides were capable of making. Everton on the bench, they had their attacking options where Anthony Gordon, who was on loan in the Championship last season at Preston, and Ellis Sims, who was on loan in League One and has only just recovered from a hamstring injury. On the flip side, you have Villa with Leon Bailey, who paid £30 million for from Bayer Leverkusen. He comes on and unsurprisingly changes the game. And that was it for Everton at Villa for 60 minutes. They competed. They looked decent on the counter-attack before Matty Cash opened the scoring. Damari Gray flashed a shot just wide. If that had gone in, things might have been different. But it was the attacking options on the bench. Solomon Rondon making his full debut. Doesn't quite look fit yet. Didn't look fit against QPR either. So it was just those things. And obviously, James Rodriguez as well, not there, and is now subsequently left to join Qatar. It's not the most... Trying to articulate it the right way. I don't think Rafa Benitez envisaged his attacking option to be as short, threadbare even in the summer. But unfortunately, that's what it's like at the minute with 2 strikers out. And then you've got players like Anthony Gordon who need to step up and aren't quite at the level yet. So I think there are mitigating circumstances. Don't get me wrong. The glimpses there against Villa, and I think against Norwich now on Saturday, it's just a case of grinding out 3 points if they can, because they need to take advantage now of Norwich's situation. They need to somehow grind out 3 points. Then they can go to United in the next game, and understandably, if they have players out again, there'll be no grumblings from the terraces on the coach's owner. Evan have maybe got a good eye at Man United, because they will be short of key men.
Well, this was going to be my follow-up, really. You mentioned four players there, and I'm sure Norwich fans listening to this, their eyes might have lit up a little bit as you mentioned those potentially, well, certainly missing last weekend. What is the kind of the status of those players heading into this weekend? Do you expect them to return? Do you expect a few of them to return?
No, I don't expect any. The injury situation's got worse for Everton. QPR, Lucas Digne come off injured, so did Andre Gomes as well. Benitez wasn't too fearful of either, but you never know of these things. Dean might be injured. And then your first choice left-back, and then when they cover, real cover at left-back, they let Nkuku go on loan to Standard Liège on deadline day, which confused a few people. And Thierry Small, who's the club's youngest ever player, forced a move to Southampton on the right-hand side. You've got John Joe Kenny covering at QPR, and he didn't have his best of games, and have a great loan spell at Celtic last season either. And Ben Godfrey plays on the right-hand side of Villa and got exposed a couple of times. So this is what I'm talking about, why Everton fans, the ire wasn't directed at Benitez. It was why it was more directed to the powers that be after QPR, because they've got in this situation. Everton fans knew it might have been unlikely, but in the hypothetical situation after the window slammed shut, they were saying, well, what happens if both our fullbacks get injured at the same time? Well, they might have that situation on their hands now, Everton, and that's what I mean. If Everton can grind out a win, it'll feel like an absolutely massive result.
It's interesting what you said in your first part of your answer there about maybe this weekend being an opportunity just to, well, certainly to respond first and foremost, but equally to take the pressure off that trip to Old Trafford, which is immensely difficult at any time of the year. So do you expect so whenever Norwich come to town, I feel like whenever we get an opposition fan on in the Premier League, it's one they circle and look at as being 3 points, but particularly given the situation Norwich are in at the moment, Everton will be looking at this one as a must-win irrespective of their injuries.
Yeah, of course you would. I mean, Everton, rightly so, want to keep kicking on after the good start to the season. You'd be behind that one and thinking, as you say, when you look at your fixture, you think, right, we should be getting 3 points there. The task is a lot loftier now. Especially, you do wonder if Damari Gray has an off day and Townsend as well. Both of them started superbly. Both of those have an off day. Where are the goals coming from? Rondon hasn't done too much, as I say, yet. Decore scored on the opening day of the season. But behind those, maybe a set piece, I don't know. I'm sure Everton fans now will take a scruffy set piece goal now and walk away with a 1-0 win. It might not look the prettiest, but with circumstances against them, and let's be honest, Norwich are bound to pick up points at some point, and they're not going to go the full season without picking up a few wins here and there. It's going to happen, so let Everton fans be hoping, touch wood, it's not this weekend where Norwich get the first point of the season.
Yeah, let's hope they pick up points. We'll have one for an extremely long season. Nick, to throw it over to you, this is, as we said, in Premier League terms, we spoke a lot last week about the home games coming up, starting, of course, with Watford, which didn't end in a particularly good way. And I'll ask you about that game in a moment. But just looking at these games in isolation, these next two before the October international break, Everton and Burnley, two long trips to difficult places. Norwich, of course, picked up their only away win last time around at Goodison Park. How important a game or two games, if you want to stretch it out like that, is this? Not necessarily for Norwich City's prospects in terms of survival this season, because I think even those who have already confined Norwich to relegation will probably know that after seven games, you're not down. But obviously, for the mood, it feels fairly important that they pick up at least something from these two games.
I thought we were down. I thought it was over already. So maybe we can go to Everton and get some. There might be a glimmer of hope there. No, we don't have Dennis Trebeny this time, Will, so that won't be happening again. But yeah, of course, the mood has to change at some point, right? We have to find a way. How long that takes is, you know, at some point we're at a shot to nothing, and that is what hurts Norwich fans the most, because a shot to nothing was not what we expected coming up this season. What we expected coming up this season was investment and to look like a Premier League team, so that we didn't have to do what we did last time, which is, you know, basically hold our breath and, you know, look through our fingers at the games because we knew we couldn't be competitive. And quite honestly, it was Daniel Farke that got us to the Premier League with that squad. It wasn't reinvested in, not nearly to the level that we now see as Norwich fans. When you do start investing, it's still tough. So what he was able to produce in that first season was still great, to pick up points and to pick up wins at Goodison Park and other places as well. So yeah, of course, I think the mood can change quickly. I mean, these are the types of, when you look at teams, Everton are not a team that's in and around us, but when they're struggling with injuries, any team in the Premier League, you look at Liverpool, when they missed a couple of key players, suddenly anyone could beat them on their day. So if teams are going to start to pick up injuries, and that's where Norwich have strengthened. We have bought in a bigger squad. We have now got more options where it's not threadbare, should we start to pick up injuries. Right now, we don't have a huge amount of injuries. So if we do go to Everton and we kind of get rolled over with Everton missing players, if they are going to be missing, that's going to be one of those nails in the coffin, I think, for the current setup of Norwich City Football Club.
I don't want to talk about it too much because it's been analysed to death. There's a lot of disappointment about it, but just very quickly, that Watford game, to look back on that, it was dreadful, wasn't it? I think that's probably the only word we can really use. I mean, the first game that really supporters were hoping, expecting maybe even Norwich City to pick up points, and the performance probably didn't warrant the support, I suppose, that they were given for long portions of that game.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been so nervous or anxious when one player picks up the ball. But Ismaïla Sarr, that guy, every time he picks up the ball and he looks like he's moving about 5% of his speed, and everyone around him is just freaking out. And I think that, you know, shows you where Norwich are at right now. Is we were just completely worried about him. And because we were so focused on him, things just started happening around us. And, you know, the game slips away from you. It's, in the Premier League, the game slips away. The season, the 18-19 season, when we went up, we would go two goals down and we wouldn't, you know, don't worry, Norwich have got this. You know, 3-0 down to Forest at home, you know, going behind at Millwall in the last minute. We could quickly turn things around. The Premier League, you know, we saw how stubborn Watford were after they scored that third goal, and there's still 10 minutes left in the game. You would think with a crowd behind Norwich and the fact that we're bringing on attacking players, we might be able to have a bit more of a go. It's hard at this level to come back. So letting those early goals in, and they're you know, Ozan Kabak would probably hold his hands up and say, yeah, made a mistake there and probably should have seen the run and come across him. But when you start leaking those types of goals, it's really hard to win. And that's my fear with Everton and Burnley, is they score in the first 20, 30 minutes, and then it's almost impossible for Norwich to get back into the game.
Yeah, they're conceding goals far too easily at the moment. Another three, of course, in midweek in that Carabao Cup game against a much-changed Liverpool side without quite a few of their big hitters. So maybe Everton will take some hope from what they saw on Tuesday night. Will, just very quickly, before I ask you about how you see this this game going, Ben Godfrey, most Norwich fans, of course, will be interested in his progress at Everton. He obviously signed for the Blues last summer. Talk to us a little bit about how he's getting on and his progression at the club, because it seems like he's ended up as kind of a makeshift fullback at times.
Yeah, I think his progression has been hurtling, to be honest with you. I don't think anyone expects him to maybe progress as well as he did. I think when he came in, you think, oh, signed defender who's gone down with knowledge, what are we getting him for? Well, I think he quickly showed his qualities, and as you say, filled in at right back last season, at times left back when Dean was out, and Fabian Delphi, who first deputised there, got injured, and then Godfrey had to fill the void. So yeah, he's done superbly. He's one of those who you look at Everton and you think they need to start progressing now, because look, it's Richarlison's the prize asset, and you got Calvert-Lewin, but he's not far behind him now, Ben Godfrey. Definitely not. He's only getting better. Real asset. I think a lot of Everton fans would concur that when everyone's fit, he's probably the strongest centre half, along with Yerry Mina. To be ahead of, you know, Michael Keane and Mason Holiday, to establish at this level, let's face it, it's a real compliment. Yeah, real asset for Everton. Real shrewd signing, and he's got plenty of time on his hands, hasn't he? I'm sure that Norwich fans will hope that he might be moved on. There'll be a nice little windfall with a sell-on fee that's likely installed in his contract.
Yeah, absolutely. I remembered fondly, I'm sure Nick will agree, by Norwich fans. So really good to see him doing well, although hopefully he has an off day on Saturday and helps out his former club a little bit. That'll be good. Will, I'll throw it straight back to you then. So, injury problems at Everton. Start of the season that's been bright. Response needed from that, well, two defeats really to Villa and then QPR in the cup. So how do you see this one going from kind of an Everton perspective? As you said, one they will have circled with 3 points in mind. Do you think they'll be able to do that this weekend?
Yeah, it'll be tight, won't it? It'll be back to the drawing board for Rafa Benitez and what he does from the team that the plays. Obviously, it'll be dictated by whether Dean's fit or even Andre Gomez, because you think with Rondon, your only sole striker, you'd probably try and play three-man midfield and play Rondon up top on his own, like he did at Villa. So, yeah, I think it'll be tight. I think Everton fans are snapping hands off for a 1-0 win now. So, I'll go a 1-0 win from a whole, well, Norwich of set-piece defender. I mean, the best this season, has it? So, Everton try and take advantage of that.
Very diplomatic, Will, in terms of Norwich City's defending their set pieces. Nick, I'll throw it across to you. Do you see this being the weekend that Norwich get their first point/points on the board?
Maybe. I can see us without. I mean, if Everton are missing Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison, and if we can't keep them to one goal, then we are in big trouble. And I can see us scoring, so I'll go for a 1-1 draw to kickstart our season.
Lovely stuff, gents. Thank you so much for joining me, Nick, and we'll of course leave all the links to the relevant socials and pages where you can check out some more of their stuff. Thank you all for watching. Let's hope Norwich City can get a point, maybe even three, on the board this weekend, and we're talking next week in a lot more glowing terms about this Norwich City side. Thank you very much for watching.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.